ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Which verse is on the board? Seven? Okay. So we're continuing reading from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 3, which is entitled Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers. And today we start at text 7. Atas tvam eko bhutanam sheshvaranam adhishvaraha shasta danda dharo nurinam shubha shubha vechanaha atastame kabhutanam sheshvaranam adishvaraha shasta danda dharo nurinam shubha shubha vechanaha Atastame kabhutanam Sheshvaranam adhishvaraha Shasta dandadharo nurinam Shubha shubha vivechanaha Atastame kabhutanam Sheshvaranam adhishvaraha Shasta danda dharo nunam Shubha shubha vivechanaha Please chant. Atastame Atastame kabhutanam Ishvaranam adhishvaraha Namam Shubhashubha vivechanaha Atastame kabhutanam Ishvaranam adhishvaraha Ashtaradandarayam Shubha Shubha Vivechanaha Vaishnavis Atastam Ekabhutana Sikshara Ashtaradandarayam Ishvaranam Adhishvaraha Asaranam Yubhavaneka Atastame Kabhutana Ishvaranam Adhishvaraha Asaranam Shubha, Shubha, Vechanaha. So, synonyms, Ataha, as such. Tvam, you. Ekaha, one. Bhutanam, of all living beings. Sa Ishwaranam, including all the demigods. Adhishwaraha, the Supreme Master. Shasta, the Supreme Ruler. Dandadaraha, the Supreme Administrator of Punishment. Nrinam, of human society. Shubha, Ashubha, Vivechanaha, one who discriminates between what is auspicious and inauspicious. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. The supreme judge must be one, not many. It was our understanding that you are that supreme judge and that you have jurisdiction even over the demigods. Our impression was that you are the master of all living entities. The supreme authority who discriminates between the pious and impious activities of all human beings. Please repeat. The supreme judge must be one, not many. It was our understanding that you are that supreme judge and that you have jurisdiction even over the demigods. Our impression was that you are the master of all living entities. The supreme authority who discriminates between the pious and impious activities of all human beings. So, there's no purport for this verse, so I'll read 8. Tasya te vihito dando naloke vartate duna chaturbhir adbhutai siddhair agyate vipalambita. So, Prabhupada's translation. But now we see that the punishment ordained under your authority is no longer effective, since your order has been transgressed by four wonderful and perfect persons. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Yamadutas had been under the impression that Yamaraj was the only person in charge of administering justice. They were fully confident that no one could counteract his judgments, but now, to their surprise, his order had been violated by the four wonderful persons from Siddhaloka. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamini. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavade Paschatadeshtarane Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Stapatang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvatam Tangsadivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shiva Shakanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindho Dhina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishamanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vancha Kalpaturuvyasha Kripa Sanuvya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, the Yamadutas are, Prabhupada states in one place, a little bit angry with Yamaraj, their master, because of what had transpired. They were kind of hoping that he would actually chastise the Vishnu Dutas for stopping them. That was their hope. So we'll get into that a little bit. But before diving into that aspect, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate Suhasa's reading from the first canto in the morning. It really brings back such, because, you know, Prabhupada emphasized that this first, the Srimad Bhagavatam in toto is like looking at Krishna's body, and the first canto is like his lotus feet. Just as we're advised when we come before the deities to start our taking darshan at the lotus feet and then work up to the body, to the face. Similarly, we have to take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam by taking shelter of the lotus feet, the first canto. Such wonderful nectar there. Now, that doesn't mean that one should not progress, but at the same time, just as when we look at the deities, it's not that when you get to the face, you never look at the feet again. No, practically, we're always eager to look at Krishna's feet. So the devotees of the Lord, they're always eager to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. That's what makes us devotees or aspiring devotees. We should always remember that. Try to stay sheltered under the lotus feet of the Lord. So in the terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it means taking full shelter of that first canto. There's so much nectar there. It was explained to me when I joined that Prabhupada, being elderly, he didn't know exactly how much time he had left, in spite of what astrologers had told him. Still, he wasn't quite sure, so he put everything, everything with the kitchen sink was in there in the first canto. So if you really dive into the first canto. So while hearing recently, a few days back, there was one verse he read, Swas read, that reminded me, kind of jumped out. We know the scenario, Dharma the Bull and Mother Bhumi in the form of a cow, they're addressing Maharaj Parikshit because he wanted to know who had attacked them, who had beaten them and left them in that condition. So they say, if I can remember the Sanskrit, Navayam Klesha Bijani, Yataksu Purusharshaba, Purushang Tam Bijaniyo, what's it last? Vakya Bheda Vimohita. Very nice verse there. They say, O best among men, it is very difficult for us to ascertain the miscreant who has injured us in this way, who has attacked us, because we are bewildered by the variety of arguments put forth by theoretical philosophers. So Prophet in his purport, a very nice purport, he explains that, yes, there are many of these theoretical philosophers out there, and chiefly there are six philosophies that are accepted in India, in the Vedic culture. So we'll just like to review them a little bit before we get back to the Yamadutas here. So the first one mentioned is Kanada. Everybody please repeat, because we should know these. Kanada. And what is the philosophy presented by Kanada? Who knows? No. Kanada is Vaisheshika philosophy. Vaisheshika philosophy proper summarizes as Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. The Vaisheshika Vadas, they accept that Brahman is truth and this material world, Jagat Mithya, is false. But that's not what the Vaishnavas say. We won't get too deeply into that right here. Then the next one he mentions is Gautama. And what is Gautama? Everybody say Gautama. What is Gautama's philosophy? Nyaya, logic, yes. And then the next one mentioned is Patanjali. Patanjali. What is Patanjali's philosophy? Mystic yoga, yeah. And then Kapila. Everybody should know Kapila's Sankhya philosophy. And then Jaimini. Jaimini. What is Jaimini's philosophy? Karma Mimamsa. And then the last one, I'm not even going to say the name. The last of the six, everybody should know. Who is the last of the six great philosophers? Veda Vyas, Vyasadeva. And what is Vyasadeva's philosophy? Well, Prabhupada says it as Vedanta Darshan. We know, yes, that the Veda Anta, the end of knowledge, the summum bonum of Vedic knowledge, is bhakti. And this is what the Yamadutas were missing. So much so that, again, they were fried. They're not very nice. And, naturally, if somebody makes a mistake, we want to see them rise beyond it. But these guys are so fired up about their job. Not only did they want to punish Ajamil, they were licking their chops, waiting they had arrested him, but they wanted to see the Vishnudutas punished for stopping them in their duty. That's how they are. That's not the Vaishnava attitude. That's not even a Brahminical attitude. I've never seen the story personally in the Puranas, but Jai Pitaka Maharaj has told the story on a couple of occasions. It's kind of instructive, kind of fits in here. Shows the difference between the mentality of the Yamadutas and a Brahmana, what to speak of a Vaishnava. So there was this village, and there's one so-called Brahmana in this village who was extremely mean, nasty to everybody. Never had a kind word to say about anybody, mean to everybody, like that. So one day he was on his way down to the Ganga to take bath on a very narrow path, and this bull was coming from the opposite direction. So he's thinking, I'm a Brahmana, you're an animal, get out of my way. So he's telling the bull, move, and the bull didn't move. They're both facing off each other. So then he gets angry, picks up a stick, and he starts whacking the bull to get him to move. And the bull gets angry in return and gores him to death. So then another Brahmana from the same village, who was actually a Brahmana, a nice person, he came down to take his bath, and he saw this, you know, mean Brahmana had expired. He was lying on, nobody was attending to the body, nothing. So he figured, he wasn't a nice person, but at least let me take some Ganges water and put on the body. So he did that. Then he went to take his bath. Then on the way back from taking bath, he saw a bunch of Yamadutas, and they were looked all beat up and bedraggled. And so he was wondering, because, you know, Yamadutas are powerful. Who could do that to them? He asked, you know, what happened to you guys? It's just kind of out of curiosity. And he looked at him and said, leave us alone. It's your fault. He said, this guy was so mean and nasty. We were happy to come and take him, and we actually arrested him. But then because you put Ganges water on his lips, even after he died, the Vishnudutas came and said, you can't take him. And we said, no, we have him. He's ours. He was sinful. So they beat us up. So, shows several things. It shows the potency of putting Ganges water or Yamuna water on a deceased body. It's not something that we take, you know, should take lightly. We take it just kind of as a ritual. Okay, somebody dies, you put some Ganges water or some Yamuna water on them. No, it's not just a ritual. It actually is effective. And the other thing is to show how kind-hearted this Brahmana. This is real Brahmana. That yes, this man was mean, and he deservedly was killed, but, you know, let me do something to help him anyway. This is the attitude of... But the Yamadutas, their attitude, we can also kind of understand. Recently, in the news, the FBI and the some police agencies, basically the New York City Police and some other agencies, they arrested more than 120 members of the mafia, La Cosa Nostra, the family. And so now they're going to put these guys on trial. Now, we know from experience, I know growing up in New York City, it happened many times that these guys, they get arrested, they go to court, and because they have money and good lawyers, they get off on a technicality. You know, illegal wiretapping or this or that, and they get out. And of course, the police are fried because they know these guys are criminals, and we caught them. And so who cares if we broke a few rules here and there to catch them? We caught them. We should put them away. But no, they get off on some technicality, and the police remain frustrated. So the Yamadutas are kind of like that. They knew that Ajamil was sinful, and they knew he belongs to us. So they went and they got him. They tied him up, and they were ready to take him off. But he got off on a technicality because he chanted the holy name of the Lord, and therefore they couldn't take him. But they remained fried because they knew this guy was sinful. What are you talking about? So it's like that. This is the whole argument now. And Yamaraj, he's going to show them the potency, or explain to them the potency of chanting the holy name of the Lord, even once. Coming up are some very, very nice verses in this discourse between Yamaraj and the Yamadutas. One of them, most of you probably know already, Etavane Lokesmin, Pungsak Dharma Paraksmita, Bhakti Yoga Bhagavati, Tanama Grihanadabi. There, Yamaraj is going to explain that Bhakti Yoga, devotional service to the Lord, beginning with the chanting of the holy name, is the highest dharma for living entities in this world. But to further explain the potency of this chanting, I went back to the fifth canto, which we just passed recently, and there is one verse here that really explains, Prabhupada explains nicely, the verse itself explains, and then Prabhupada in his purport explains even in further depth about this. So this is the fifth canto, first chapter, text 35, and here it's stated, Naivang vidak purushakara uru kramasya pungsam tadangri rajasa jitasad gunanam chitrang vidura vigatak sakrida dadita yannam adheya madhuna sajahati bandham. The proper translates, my dear king, a devotee who has taken shelter of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influence of the six material whips, namely, and these we should remember, there are six whips, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. And he can conquer the mind and five senses. However, this is not very wonderful for a pure devotee of the Lord, because even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, in other words, an untouchable, is immediately relieved of bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. So this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit about the activities of King Priyavrata. And it's a long purport, but I'm going to read just a section that pertains to this point of the chanting. So the prophet says, because of the material body, every living entity in material existence is always disturbed by sadguna, six whips, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, invalidity, and death. Furthermore, another sadguna are the mind and five sense organs. Not to speak of a sanctified devotee, even a chandala, an outcast who is untouchable, is immediately freed from material bondage if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. So we may wonder, all of us here have been chanting for many years, most of us anyway, does that mean that we're freed of material bondage? Do we feel like we're free from material bondage? All right, Prabhupada's going to explain. Sometimes caste brahmanas argue that unless one changes his body, he cannot be accepted as a brahmana. For since the present body is obtained as a result of past actions, one who has in the past acted as a brahmana takes birth in a brahmana family. Therefore they contend, without such a brahminical body, one cannot be accepted as a brahmana. Herein it is said, however, that even Vidura Vigata, a chandala, a fifth class untouchable, is freed if he utters the holy name even once. Being freed means that he immediately changes his body. Sanatana Goswami confirms this. Yata kanchana tamyati kangsyam rasavidanataha. Tata diksha vidanena dvijatvam jayate nrinam. When a person, even though a chandala, is initiated by a pure devotee into chanting the holy name of the Lord, his body changes as he follows the instructions of the spiritual master. Although one cannot see how his body has changed, we must accept on the grounds of the authoritative statements of the Shastras that he changes his body. So this is what's going on. Externally we may be the same, but internally the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, ego, gradually transform. So it's not always evident when somebody achieves the platform of pure devotion. It's not something that you can see externally. It's not that you start to glow and you get a third eye or, you know. No. None of these external signs may be, but internally the subtle body totally changes. This is to be understood, Prabhupada continues, without arguments. This verse clearly says, Sajahati Bandham. He gives up his material bondage. The body is a symbolic representation of material bondage according to one's karma. Although sometimes we cannot see the gross body changing, chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord immediately changes the subtle body. And because the subtle body... And because the subtle body changes, the living entity is immediately freed from material bondage. After all, changes of the gross body are conducted by the subtle body. Very important point. We're going to get our next gross body based on what the subtle body is. So if our subtle body transforms into that of a devotional body, in other words, devotional mental activities, devotional intellectual activities, and the ego of being the servant of Krishna, then our next body will be given to us accordingly. Even if we don't complete the course, we'll get a higher grade of body, as Krishna says, Suchinam Shrimatam Gehe, or if we're completely purified, then we'll go back and expand our original spiritual body. In the subtle body, the mind is predominant, and therefore if one's mind is always absorbed in remembering the activities or the lotus feet of the Lord, which we've compared to the first canto, so we should always think about that first canto, he is to be understood, or she is to be understood, to have already changed his present body and become purified. Therefore, it is irrefutable that a chandala or any fallen or low-born person can become a brahmana simply by the method of bona fide initiation. So, initiation, as Prabhupada points out, means a beginning. It's an opportunity to go forward. Not that we become initiated and therefore I've arrived and I have nothing else to do. No. It means the beginning, the start. We're on the path and we should desire strongly to keep progressing. And taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books is so important. Sometimes it's the only shelter we have. Some of you may remember That young couple that used to come every morning, Hitendra, and what's her name again? Kinjal, yeah. They both got IT jobs elsewhere. He was fortunate he got a job in Denver, so he's actually living in one of the apartments near the Denver Temple, and he goes to the temple every day, gets prasadam there. But she got a job in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, where there are no devotees, probably within hundreds of miles. So she's feeling a little bit, you know. So I told her, I said, take shelter of Krishna by taking shelter of Prabhupada's books. Especially in the beginning, I recommend for new people, just read the books from cover to cover to try to begin to appreciate the content, how much Prabhupada has given us. Then after you've done that, after you've gone through all the books cover to cover, then you go back and take one bite at a time and try to really appreciate each verse and each purport. But Prabhupada has given us so much. He's given us so much. It's mind-blowing. Like I said, when you sit here in the morning and you hear these verses from the first canto, it just takes you back to when you first heard it. And there's such potency there and so much information that Prabhupada gives in all of his books. But that first canto that was originally published in three parts, there's so much there to dive into, to meditate on. So this is our daily meditation. When we hear these verses, it's not that, you know, Suvas is just wasting his breath. It shouldn't be like that. That's the beginning of our daily meditation. Well, you hear in the morning, you meditate on that. And then we come to Bhagavatam class, we get something else to meditate on. And you keep that throughout the day. And we're meant to discuss these points and really try to understand them, not that they go in one ear and out the other. Prabhupada says in the preface to the Bhagavad Gita, if I remember correctly, he says, our Krishna consciousness movement is genuine, historical, authorized, and transcendental because it is based on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, gradually this movement will become the most popular movement in the world, especially amongst the younger generation. And that's why this college preaching is so important. Like yesterday we had a class here. And because the young mind is still impressionable. They're not so conditioned yet. Not so fixed in their ways. And if we can inject just even a little bit of Krishna consciousness into the minds and hearts of the younger generation, then gradually it will take effect. Just like recently at the BBT, one young lady called, Indian, she said that she wanted a catalog. So I asked her, well, how did you come across Krishna consciousness? And she said, oh, one of my friends had one of your books. I think it was Journey of Self-Discovery. And I read it, and I was so attracted that I immediately wanted to know if there were more books like this, and this is why I want the catalog. So this is going on. Prabhupada publishes books primarily for the intellectual class of persons, people who can appreciate philosophy. But in the beginning, it's not possible to really understand, even amongst the so-called educated class. It takes a little bit of purification. Once on a morning walk here in L.A., some devotees were complaining like this to Prabhupada that, you know, Srila Prabhupada, once we start talking about principles and then they don't want to, and Prabhupada immediately stopped. He said, why are you surprised? He said, you're preaching to cats and dogs. He says, first of all, make them fortunate by giving them this chanting of the holy name, by giving them prasadam. And in this way, when they become a little fortunate, then they can start to appreciate the philosophy. But it's very difficult for people to understand, like Shastakrit was saying in his class yesterday. That it's just even those educated personalities, it just goes over their head, everything that's there. But by repetition, by hearing repeatedly, which is what we should do, by hearing repeatedly, this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the subtle body actually changes. The mind changes. Instead of just hovering over the material platform and hearing and wanting to hear material katha, gradually the subtle body changes so we only want to hear Krishna katha. Instead of using our intellect, or just like recently I saw a posting online, somebody was saying how the Indians, yes, they're generally pretty intelligent, but they simply use their intelligence to cheat, to, you know, make money in any way they can. And this is what's passing actually for Brahminical activity in India these days. A lot of Brahmanas, they, you know, because they're a little more intelligent by birth, they simply use their intelligence how to make money. But that's not what Brahmanas are meant for. Brahmanas are meant for patan patan, yajan yajan, dana pratigraha, for learning the Vedas and teaching others, for understanding the proper sacrifice that's performed and performing it, teaching others how to perform it. This is Brahminical activities. Proper use of a Brahmana's intellect. But if we don't do that, if we don't ourselves dive our, you know, submerge our own intellect and mind into this philosophy, then how can we inspire those who are rabbinically inclined or a little bit intellectually inclined to do the same? We can't. So it begins with us. Prabhupada gave us this task that I've given you so many books, so much knowledge. Take it, swim in it, dive in it, and then invite others to dive in. Okay, we can stop here. Any discussion, questions, comments? Mukunda Datta Prabhu.
Thank you very much for the nice class. The second line, Seshwarana Matishwara, meaning that he is the Lord, Supreme Lord even of the demigods, and the judge of their...
Let me just call up the verse on my computer here. Yeah, go ahead.
It kind of implies that there is karmic judgment among the demigods, but we've heard that demigods actually don't have any sinful reactions to their mistakes. I'm wondering if you can comment.
Yeah, this was a mistake on the part of the Yamadutas. They thought that Yamaraj had jurisdiction over everybody, including the demigods. This is what they've stated. But Yamaraj himself will tell him later on in this chapter, or will be explained, actually Prabhupada mentions in one purport, that actually has dominion over the human beings. The animals are not culpable. If an animal does something that we consider to be bad, you know, you can't take him to court, you can't, you know, they're not culpable. They're not responsible in that way. Similarly, the demigods. The demigods are burning up the results of good karma. And when it's over, chinya punya marcha lokam vishanti, they'll come back down to this level of existence. So they're not under Yamaraj's jurisdiction either. Yamaraj has jurisdiction over the human beings, because human life is very responsible life. We have to know what is to be done and what should not be done. Yama niyama. This is the beginning of yoga practice. Yama niyama means knowing what should be done and what should not be done. But we're so conditioned that even though we know what we shouldn't do, we still want to do it. And even though we know what we should do, we're reluctant to do it. This is our dilemma, because we're so conditioned. Well, that's explained by Krishna, Vishaya Vinavartante Niraharse Dehinam, Rasya Varja Varso Pyasya Param Jishtra Navartate. That the conditioned soul may be restricted from sense gratification, though the taste for sense object remains. So this is our position, many of us, that, you know, we accept the guidance of the Guru and therefore we restrict ourselves from doing certain things, but the taste is still there in the heart. We still want to do them. But ceasing such engagements by receiving a higher taste, we become fixed in consciousness. So we have to consciously strive for that higher taste, which begins with hearing. If we consciously strive every day to hear, just like I appreciate when I travel with Savas, he always has his Walkman, or now he has an iPod, and every day he makes it a part of his sadhana. I see him walking around Vrindavan with the iPod, listening to a lecture every day, at least one lecture. So that's a very good example. If we allow ourselves to hear from Srila Prabhupada directly by hearing him speak in a lecture, which is my favorite way, I've noted over the years that I've been around Krishna consciousness that when I hear Srila Prabhupada say something, like in a lecture or a conversation, it sticks much more easily than reading. When I read it, you know, I have to read and reread and all that to really fix it up. But when I hear Srila Prabhupada speak, so... this is what we should do. Just continue hearing. Okay, last, Subhas had his hand up. Let's take one more and then we can stop.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. You know, when you were speaking, it kind of made me think how important the culture of Krishna consciousness is. Because, you know, today we find there's not very many people that are interested in philosophy, because they're so interested in making money, as you suggested. Even the brahmanas, they're more intelligent, so to speak, and they're utilizing their energies for making money. So, an interesting point of that was that if we make the culture of Krishna consciousness very attractive, people will actually come just on the basis of culture. Mm-hmm. And an interesting point was that the other day on the internet, we were searching, Tadeep was searching, and it was interesting how we find there's a lot of people on the internet that are young, enthusiastic, kind of successful people that really have respect for the Krishna conscious movement on a cultural basis. One girl actually had a guests come with her to the Krishna temple, and she made it an outing. You know, it's like on Facebook. They made it a whole extravaganza to the point where, you know, they met at a certain time. They met at Govinda's buffet. And no, they met at the gift shop first. And it showed a whole line of photos, how they were looking through the clothing and how they were, you know, liking this, liking that. And then after they did some purchases, then they went downstairs and she took a whole complete photography of the restaurant, even to the point of the plate itself that she made. She made a plate, a prasada, took a photograph of it. And, you know, just of all the different aspects of the buffet, the restaurant, the whole arena there. But what was really interesting is that there were so many comments. That was what really was the real interesting part about it, that it was actually a national-wide, you know, I forget what it's called, actors, you know, poor actors something, food or something like that. I can't remember.
What is it called?
Yeah, the actor's diet. So he knows. It's called actor's diet. What was really interesting is that comments started pouring in from all over the country. And one person actually said, oh, when you said you were going to meet the Krishnas, I thought you were going to go to the airport. I thought you were going to the airport to meet them. And they said, and then the comments were like, wow, what kind of a beautiful place is that? You know, with all the color of the cloth. And there was just at least about 20 or 25 comments. And there was not one comment which was negative in terms of the devotees in the temple. The only comments were all positive. The food looked beautiful. The place looked beautiful. The whole atmosphere is beautiful. And there were several of them. One from Boston was saying, boy, I'd love to come with you on one of your luncheons to the Krishna temple. So my point being is that we can preach by the cultural aspect of Krishna consciousness. And if we take it serious, people will actually become attracted and they'll become purified. Again, like I say, this the person that's making the front doors. In the beginning, he's from Sweden or somewhere. He says, I'm an atheist. He told me that from the very beginning. And I don't really believe in God. I was never really brought up to believe in God. But every day you see him now, you Omkar can witness this, he says, Haribo! This is his greeting with us every day now. Every day, him and his brother-in-law are eating in the restaurant. Tons of prasada. This is an atheist. I mean, this is a person who, you know, in his own way, not in a harsh way, but just saying, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. And now he's telling me that he's seen a lot of religions, but you guys really walk the walk, talk the talk. And it wasn't because we're preaching to him. We don't tell him anything about Krishna, unless he asks for it. Just by eating the Krishna prasada, associating with devotees. And now he's telling me yesterday that our temple room is the most beautiful place he's ever seen. And I, you know, you look around here, we come in every day and we look around and we think, what? What's he talking about, the most beautiful place? Some devotees have come up to me and tell me, well, what are you going to do with this place? Why don't you guys do something here? This place looks like it's, you know, it's useless. And here's a person who's an atheist and now telling me regularly what a beautiful place this is. And the altar is gorgeous, he said. So my point is, culturally, if we just support cultural aspects of Krishna consciousness, whether we know it, or don't like it, or like it, doesn't matter. Culturally, we can get these people to think about Krishna, and they'll become purified.
Keep working on it. Maybe he won't give you a bill at the end. Anyway, yes, the secret weapon is prasadam. Recently, I've been doing a little bit of outside work because, you know, you have to make a little cash for the degree, huh? So I'm taking some photographs of printer accessories for a catalog for one of my clients. This is a company that's in Culver City, not exactly walking distance. I mean, it's far, kind of far away in Culver City. The owner of the company is a vegetarian, and one of his employees, his job every day is to go get his lunch. So sometimes he comes to Govinda, sometimes he goes elsewhere. He goes as far away as Beverly Hills, he was telling me, to get salads that cost $30. But the rest of the employees, they're not so wealthy. So almost every day, one of them drives over here to Govinda's and collects prasadam for all the rest of them. So this prasadam is a secret weapon. Govinda's is definitely having a big impact out there, much bigger than we realize. You know, because these are ordinary people. You pass them on the street, you wouldn't know they have any interest at all in Krishna consciousness. But every single day, one of them drives over here and collects prasadam for the rest of the workers over there. So, Sri Krishna Prasadam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Granth Sarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.